Officials are only beginning to piece together what happened at this home in rural Polk County. It's located off of Highway 7 near Dover, about 6 miles north of town.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home in Fayetteville is Randy Dixon, who is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy.
Hi, Kyle.
Hi. This week, we're taking a look at some of Arkansas's nefarious past, I would say. We're talking about crime.
Yes, sensational crime.
Well, good
crimes,
point, yes.
Like crimes of the century that were terrible times, actually, in Arkansas history. And many of them, as a news person, I covered. So we've dipped into just a few of them that are now available in the KATV archives. The rest are being digitized now and will be coming in over the next year, starting next week. And unfortunately, there will probably be more to come because this just sort of scratches the surface of some of the sensational crimes that have occurred over the years in Arkansas.
We should mention that even before Arkansas was a state, there were sensational crimes, right? Unfortunately, that's part of the human condition. I remember reading about the earliest days of Fayetteville and bloodshed on the Fayetteville Square. And, of course, the legendary gangsters, right? Pretty Boy Floyd and Bonnie and Clyde would have skirmishes
right.
inside Arkansas.
Al Capone
yes.
had his own room at the Arlington. So he would stop in when he was on his way from Chicago to Las Vegas. And, you know, there are still some unsolved crimes. Those are always of great interest. And there are some in Arkansas that date back all the way to the 60s that haven't been solved. One interesting one was a lady by the name of Maud Crawford.
Yeah.
Who was a Camden attorney, and she disappeared in 1957. And what made that so interesting is that she was a law partner with Senator John McClellan, who at the time was investigating organized crime and labor. He was on a Senate subcommittee. And so the big speculation in the media was that the mob had kidnapped her, sort of sending a message to the senator. But I think, you know, that turned out to be not true. But that crime has never been solved. Now, another story from South Arkansas was a lady by the name of Bobo Shin. She was a 25-year-old Magnolia real estate agent. And she disappeared more recently. It was in 1978. And she was apparently going to show a house that had been fixed up, and they found her car behind the grocery store, I believe, and her shoes were in it, her purse was in it, the windows were rolled down, and it got a lot of attention. This, I found a clip from a reporter named Les Bolton, who went down from KATV, and this is his closing stand-up report on the Bobo Shin case.
Bobo's car was found in this parking space Thursday night. Bloodhounds were brought in on the search today. Still, the results are negative. There's no trace of Bobo Shin. We pass along this personal request from Bobo's sister, Becky, who asked us to say this. Just in case Bobo can hear your voice, tell her we love her and we want her back home. This is Les Bolton in Columbia County.
Of course, there have been crimes in the past 30, 35 years that everyone, if you were living in Arkansas at the time, or maybe not even living in Arkansas because they would gain national headlines, people remember to this day. You have some examples, right?
You recall Henry Lee Lucas
yes.
being in the news?
Yes.
Yes, in the 90s and early 2000s, and he was a serial killer that was, I believe, on death row in Texas and confessed to some Arkansas murders along with, just a slew of others. I think total, he confessed to 360 murders.
In several different states.
Yes, all over the country.
Right.
But, you know, the largest mass murderer in the history of Arkansas is Ronald Gene Simmons.
Russellville area?
I know you know that name. Yeah. Yes, Dover.
Yeah.
And this was back in right around Christmas of 87. That's what made it so tragic. But he killed his entire family, invited them all to his, and it was more like a compound outside of Dover, and he killed 14 members of his immediate family. But I was on the assignment desk at the time and got a call from Pope County in Russellville, and there had been a shooting at some businesses. Well, that was Ronald Gene Simmons, who had gone to some of his previous places of employment and had opened fire on his former coworkers. He killed two of them, and so that's how the investigation began. That's when the KATV crews went up to that area, and then they ended up going to his house, and that's when the really grisly discoveries were made, and this is one of the early reports on what police found.
Officials are only beginning to piece together what happened at this home in rural Polk County. It's located off of Highway 7 near Dover, about 6 miles north of town. The search for 9 missing relatives of Ronald Simmons began in this small pond. Searchers found only twigs. Then in the woods, about 50 yards from the house, investigators found a fresh grave. After some digging, they found body after body, a total of 4 adults and 3 children. Other investigators found the bodies of 2 small children in the trunks of 2 cars about 100 yards from the home. Simmons is the prime suspect following a shooting spree in which he apparently killed 5 other family relatives in his home, killed 2 others in Russellville, and wounded 4.
Listening back to some archives of how some sensational crimes in Arkansas history have been covered, Randy, we're so used to now the instant news, right? I mean, instantly there's coverage, or if not coverage, speculation. In the late 90s, what would KATV do if there was a big developing crime story like this? Would they go live, or would they wait till 5 or 5:30 or 6 to have the story on the air?
It would depend. Something like this, we would interrupt during the day with programming. We would send our satellite truck and go up. And this was, of course, a major ongoing story. We covered the trial, and that was sensational. He attacked his attorney in court right before the jury went out, hit him, and tried to get the deputy's weapon. He wanted to be executed, and it was one of the quickest, from conviction to execution, because he was executed in 1990. But one of the other sensational aspects to this story, there was a reporter anchor by the name of Ann Jansen.
Yes.
Who's a friend of mine who was with the CBS station. And apparently Simmons was in his cell and saw her on TV and said, he wrote her a letter and said that he reminded her of his daughter.
Ugh.
The one he had killed. It was one that he had fathered his own grandchild through abuse and incest. But he wanted to talk to her, and he wrote her several letters. And I talked to Ann just yesterday about it. And she spent several sessions. He didn't want a camera in. He didn't want her to take notes. But he talked to her on at least half dozen occasions. And one of the things I asked, and I said, did he seem crazy? And she said, yes. Mm. That he was very narcissistic. He was actually kind of proud of himself.
Well, the next one you have on the list is another name that many people might not be familiar with, the case of John Markle.
Yes, and I don't know that you could write a Hollywood script more strange than this. John Markle was a vice president at Stevens Inc., the finance company. This was back in right after Halloween of 1987. Right. Yes, and he had a big renovated house on Main Street, downtown Little Rock. This is an interview that took place that morning with the Pulaski County coroner. His name is Steve Novoychek, and he had just inspected the crime scene.
From all indications, we've got a triple homicide-suicide. As I understand it, the Mr. Markle, John Markle, called his lawyer this morning at around 4 o'clock. His lawyer knew something was wrong. We haven't interviewed the lawyer yet, so we don't know exactly what was said. The lawyer came to the scene, flagged down some help. Police got here and went in, and when they went in, they found Christine Markle, who is John Markle's wife, dead in her bed. She had been shot. We found 9-year-old daughter Suzanne. She had been shot, and we found 13-year-old daughter Amy. She also had been shot a number of times. And we found Mr. Markle in his office in his study downstairs. He'd been shot once in the head.
And he had put on a mask, a Halloween mask of an old man, apparently, and walked around the house and killed his wife, killed his two daughters, and then he killed himself. And then what made it even more strange is that his mother happened to be an Academy Award-winning actress named Mercedes McCambridge.
And her most famous role didn't include her face, right? Yeah.
Right. She was the voice of the devil in The Exorcist. And it turns out letters were found over time, and he had apparently been embezzling money. You know, the house of cards was just about to fall in. And he decided that, he wasn't going to go on and he would take his family with him.
I'm wondering, Randy, would you have discussions in the newsroom? Because this is obviously a sensational story with these sensational and lurid angles. Would there be conversations in the newsroom? How much airtime do we give this? Do we do this when, I don't know, there might be a tax package that legislators are talking about? Would you discuss the balance and how much attention to provide these stories?
Oh, multiple times a day. Yeah. We would have editorial meetings every morning, every afternoon, and the anchors, the assignment people, the producers, we would all discuss the merits of every story. So yes, it was done daily and more than one time per day.
Yeah. All right, let's move ahead to a crime story that was a big story after it happened and then for years afterward. Again, this was an international story, the West Memphis Three.
Yes. I think everyone knows who this is. It's Damien Eccles, Jesse Miskelly, and Jason Baldwin were all arrested for the murder of three young boys outside of West Memphis. And sensational trial, found guilty. But before we go into all that, this is another one of those early on news reports as the, facts were just beginning to develop. And this was actually before, if you'll notice in the reporter's story, that we were just becoming to know this one suspect by the name of Damien.
Sadness, shock, and fear continue to hover over the town of West Memphis. Three of the community's children are dead, another three charged with murdering them. 24 hours after his son's arrest, Mike Eccles' father pleads to the community for help.
Because I'm asking. No, I'm begging. The killer or the killers that done this to please come forward. Find it within your heart to come forward, to clear these boys. I believe in my son's innocence. I'm his dad, and I'm not doing any more than any other dad would do for his son.
very early on in the West Memphis 3 episode. And of course, there would be documentaries, there would be international protests, and eventually an unprecedented ending to it all. And I think you're going to save the whole story for a future segment of its own.
Yeah, I think it deserves its own because it spans so many years and so many people. You know, Eddie Vedder got involved.
Yeah, from Pearl Jam.
I believe the Dixie Chicks did in wanting to release the West Memphis 3, and it did become a, you know, an international issue. But, you know, Damien ended up, he was on death row. The other two had life sentences, and they sort of were forced into a plea. It was, I believe it's called, what, an Alford plea?
Yeah.
Where they are still guilty, but they profess their innocence. I think that's dumbing it down way too much, but that's my understanding. That was in August of 2011.
All right, so we'll spend more time with that story because of its international spread later. There are going to be some other crime-tinged subjects you're going to cover in the coming months, right?
Well, there's a great new book out called The Vapors.
Right.
That's about gambling and the mob, you know, Oney Madden and all of those characters from the mob down in Hot Springs that in the KETV archives, there are actually some instances where Rockefeller came in and burned the slot machines. And there are actually some of the prior center interviews with FBI different folks who were involved that I think we can do a couple of episodes on gambling in Hot Springs, which I think could be interesting.
Very much so. Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. There are all kinds of archives and more, not just from KETV, but interviews that have been done by Pryor Center interviewers. You can find all this material by Googling Pryor Center. It will take you to the website. Randy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.